devils. Get on my elevator, baby, we're going up. Give me that now and later, I can't get enough.
So welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm. We go now to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline and bring in Scott Petrek from the Elyria Chronicle Telegram. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. How are you doing? Scott, when's the last time you remember the Browns starters playing into this fourth preseason game?
Man, that's a good question. I think it might have been Romeo Crennel. I remember showing up in Chicago one year with Mangini, thinking the starters were going to play, and they didn't. And I'm not sure they played since.
Interesting. So what are your expectations seeing them tonight? What are you, offensively and defensively, what are you looking for out of the starters?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to see him play a ton, but you'd like your, you know, Coach Jackson would like the offense to get out there and put together one good drive. And I think he wants it to be sustained. He's talked about that the last couple of weeks, that the long ball is great, but he'd like to see kind of a variety and see them march down the field. So he'd like to see, you know, three curl runs, a couple of RG3 intermediate passes, and then cap it with a touchdown. And then on the other side of the ball, they cleaned up the run defense a little bit against Tampa Bay, but they gave up way too many yards passing. So you'd like to actually get a three and out, one or two three and outs, because they struggled on third down. They struggled against the run and the pass. And he's just looking for some momentum taken to that week one opener.
Scott, you talked about the defense, and we saw, you know, a slight improvement in the run game. But who are some of the players specifically on defense that you think have kind of been, you know, their performances thus far have kind of been up in the air, and you want to see a much more solid night tonight that gives you a little bit better feeling defensively going into week one?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with Danny Shelton. You know, he didn't play a lot early against Tampa because they were in so much nickel coverage. But he just hasn't had the impact you're looking for from the number 12 pick in the draft a year ago. So you want to see him take on those double teams, maybe get in the backfield and have a tackle for loss, which would be great. He forced a fumble in Tampa, so that was nice. And then the pass rush. We just haven't seen much pass rush from the starting unit through the first three games. And I think with Paul Kruger being cut earlier in the week, you'd like to see Nate Orchard and Emmanuel Ogba go out there and get some pressure early.
When you talk about Danny Shelton, and you made a comment that, you know, he wasn't out there a lot because they were in these nickel situations. When you're picked 12th overall, the expectation is that you're going to be able to contribute, I would imagine, all three downs. I know that's something he always set out that he wanted to be able to do. That's something that he stated many times. That's something the coaches have said they wanted. One of the reasons he was supposedly going to lose this weight was to be, you know, a three-down player, and yet we're not seeing that early in year two. Where are you at in terms of Danny Shelton? I know you talked about it a little bit, but what does he need to do to, you know, or at what point do you become concerned that he might never be that guy?
Yeah, you know what? I'm starting to get concerned, Nathan, and it's too early. You know, it's too early to label him a bust or to bench him or anything like that. He's only played 16 games in the league. But you need to see him be more disruptive, and that's what you expect out of a number 12 pick. And frankly, it's not his fault that he's a number 12 pick. You know, the previous regime took him. I had questions when they took him because I didn't think a nose tackle in today's NFL was worth that high of a pick, because I didn't think he could be on the field for more than just rushing downs. But for him to prove that he deserves to be on the field, he's got to start with the run, and he's got to stop it and be disruptive and not, you know, I mean, when we look at the Browns giving up all these running yards, it starts with him, and it's not only him, but it starts there. So he needs to be better against the run, and then try to earn those reps in the passing game where he, you know, if he can't stop the run and get some penetration there, it's not going to happen on third down either. So I think it's going to be gradual for Danny.
Yeah, the other guys who are going to earn and want to earn an opportunity are some of these young wide receivers. And who do you expect to play the most tonight? And who do you think of that group really has to earn the opportunity to make this football team?
That's a good question. I mean, I think we're going to see a good amount of Corey Coleman. I mean, we know he's on the football team, but you need to see enough of him to be confident going into week one, because he's going to be out there a ton of snaps week one, and he only played a little bit last week. So I'd like to see him catch some passes, and I think he'll play longer than the rest of the starters. I think Higgins is on the team. He's shown me enough throughout the whole offseason and then in the preseason, but he'll get plenty of reps tonight. And then, you know, Jordan Payton's got to do something. You know, he missed all that time when he was still at UCLA, and he needs to show something tonight, because I think they're going to keep three of the four rookie receivers. So it comes down to either Peyton or Lewis. And, you know, Lewis is coming off that hamstring, so I don't even know if he's going to play tonight. So I think that gives Peyton kind of the chance to win this job.
And Peyton has not yet really shown anything on special teams. That's an area where Ricardo Lewis, before his injury, did stand out. I think receiver is an interesting one. Taylor Gabriel, I think, still, you know, maybe opened some eyes or at least put himself back in the discussion after that strong game against Tampa Bay. What are the other big position battles that you're going to be watching? Because Matt and I talked earlier, and it seems that you can get the majority of the roster pretty well taken care of, but not maybe the entire roster. So where are those pressure points as you see it?
Yeah, you know, I think if you look at the secondary, there's just so many question marks after the first three corners, you know, with Hayden, Tremont, and Jamar Taylor. You know, I assume Justin Gilbert's going to be on the roster, but he's coming off the concussion. Hasn't played great. I just don't know if there's anybody behind him that you say, okay, we have to keep him instead of Justin Gilbert. You know, Charles Gaines, you got all these undrafted rookies, Howard. You know, I just don't know how that's going to shake out, and I think some jobs could be decided tonight. And then I'm looking at tight end slash fullback. You know, I think Randall Taufer, he took a bunch of snaps with the ones in Tampa Bay, so I think he looks like he's your number two guy. Seth DeValve would be on the team because he's a fourth-round rookie. Then do you keep Connor Hamlett as that fourth tight end and then maybe only keep one fullback? Or do you keep J.P. Holtz and Malcolm Johnson as your fullbacks and kind of let Connor Hamlett go because he's faded a little bit after that start, that hot start to training camp? So I think those are two spots I'm keeping an eye on.
Scott, as Nathan just talked about, that bottom maybe five or six spots that make up, you know, the final 53 roster, you know, you struggle to pick who those guys are, and a lot of, you know, onus really comes with how those guys play tonight and their perception that the coaches have of them. The one different connotation that I have is that I might think three or four of those spots might be available to players that the Cleveland Browns claim off of waivers because they do have a high priority. And do you think at all that Sashi Brown, Paul D. Podesta, Andrew Berry, as well as their scouting department, will have their ear to the streets to really understand if they can grab a valuable veteran that was released by another team and have them add some talent and depth to this Cleveland Browns roster?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think the number could be higher than three or four. You know, maybe they pick up six guys, you know, Sunday, Monday. And it'll be interesting to see how many of those guys are first and second year players. Or, like, let's say on the defensive line, where they don't have a lot of depth, do they pick up a guy that's played in the league and you can kind of plug and play? Because, you know, it's such a fine line between, okay, we're looking toward the future and we want to play all our young guys, but you also have to have some guys that you can count on to show up on Sunday who have done it before. So I'm interested to see because I think you're right. I think they're going to turn over the bottom of the roster over the weekend.
I think there will be some changes there, no question. Let's get your reaction now, at least for the first time with us, to all the moves of the last week. And has that changed your expectations for this season at all? Because I think there was so much reaction to the Andy Lee, Paul Kruger, Mingo, you know, trifecta of moves. But it doesn't change my expectation for wins or what is attempted to be accomplished this year.
Yeah, you know what? I was thinking about that. And it did change my expectations, but I think tied in with how poorly they looked against Tampa Bay. You know, I think that kind of started the week for me. You said, okay, the starters got dominated, and then they get rid of some veterans. And I think I've kind of taken a win or two off my prediction. I think if you look at each move individually, they make sense to me, especially Mingo and getting a fourth-round pick back for your punter for a team. It just shows you where the different teams are. Carolina's looking to win a Super Bowl. The Browns aren't, and they're looking to collect draft picks. The one move I kind of struggled with was Kruger. I know he didn't do anything in the preseason, but I still think that he's a capable pass rusher and probably your best pass rusher right now. So I think you take a little bit of a step back when you release a guy like that. I understand the money move. I just don't think you're as good a team as you would be if you were on the roster.
I mean, obviously there was a money component to it. I don't think that's what it was as much as they want to just get Agba on the field as much as possible. Do you want to? Go ahead.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, that makes sense, and I get that, and he would be in the way. I just think if you're talking week one, who's got a better chance to get a sack on third down, I'd probably go Kruger right now. But that's not the long-term view that the organization's taking.
No, I think you're right about that. For tonight, how much do you think – we were talking about Josh McCown earlier, and I know that, you know, nobody said that the Browns would probably ever get a fourth-round pick for a punter. They did that. No, nobody thought they'd probably get a fifth-round pick for Mingo. I mean, everybody's saying, oh, maybe it'll be a conditional seventh. They did that. We know what happened in Minnesota with Teddy Bridgewater. In light of that, do you think we see Josh McCown at all tonight, or do you think they want to keep him safe in the event that maybe somebody comes up and wants to offer that price tag?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was kind of assuming you'd see him a little bit. I thought you'd see RG3 for a series or two, and then maybe Josh for two or three, and then Cody Kessel the rest of the way. But I could see a scenario where, I mean, we all know what Josh can do, and the Browns know what Josh can do. So that makes sense to me. It's just not playing him and letting Cody Kessel get all the reps he wants, because you hope that he doesn't have to play this season, is a developmental season. That's a good point. You know, I would hold out for a third for Josh McCown. I think he's that valuable to this team in the locker room, and if something happens to Griffin, you know, I think the season would look a lot different if it was Josh McCown versus Kessler or whoever that other veteran you'd bring in. So I'd hold out for a third, and if you get it, and if you could get it, then I think you got to give him up, because you know how valuable a third-round draft pick is.
I certainly do. Talk with Scott Petrak from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram, covers the Browns. Now, that's one, Josh, that it would make sense to me if there ultimately was a move. The other one, at least from my – maybe I'm just too much of a fanboy to be objective about what Josh Gordon can do on the field. I don't want to see him traded. I want to see Josh Gordon here. I want this redemption story, which appears to be happening before our very eyes, to continue and see him be successful and be successful as a Cleveland Brown. Where do you stand on Josh Gordon?
No, I'm with you, Nathan. You know, as soon as he steps back on the field, you fall in love all over again, and it doesn't take long. It took about two routes, and I was like, man, you remember exactly what he did in 2013. He just looks different than everybody else at that position, kind of across the league.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I understand why you have to set a price, because everybody has a price in this league. But if it were up to me, I would keep him, and I'd hope that he's your number one receiver for the next 7 years.
I hope.
Me too.
We all hope, because that will be so fun. Another receiver, Corey Coleman, you said you'd expect to see a lot of him. Were you surprised that it kind of seemed like that hamstring we weren't worried about? He was so dominant, and it seems like it's almost shaken him a little bit. Do you think tonight it'll be important to kind of get the ball in his hands and let him make some plays so he can relax a little bit before week one?
I do. I think it's huge. It's interesting. You know, camp is only, what, 5-6 weeks? But you go through so many different emotions with a guy. Everybody was so high on Corey when he had that huge scrimmage in Berea. He was the guy, and then the hamstring, he couldn't play after that. And then it kind of, okay, the rest of, you know, the team goes on without him, and Pryor starts making plays, and Gordon comes back. And all of a sudden, Corey's trying to find where he fits on this roster, on this team. And Hugh Jackson said it. He said he pressed last week against Tampa Bay. So I think you need to see him calm down, get his feet under him, and you're right, make a catch or two, whether that's a quick bubble screen or you run an in route to him. You do something so the kid can feel comfortable, because like I said, you're going to need him week one, because Josh Gordon's not going to be there.
You're right. You need him in week one. And would you have ever thought after that scrimmage that there was any chance that anyone other than Corey Coleman would have won the award handed out by the writers for the best rookie in camp?
No, you're right about that. It just shows you what short memories people have.
Right? But Carl Nassibin, he's come on strong, and he's a guy that they want to see. Do you think we're moving more to maybe a four-man front, as we saw for the first time in the three preseason games, more four-man fronts against Tampa than three-man fronts?
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. You know, and I think that's the thing about Danny Shelton. He's only going to play in your three-man fronts. But if you get Danny out of there, you know, then I think Agba's got the versatility. He can play 4-3, and that's what he did at Oklahoma State. I think Joe Schobert might be better suited for 4-3 outside linebacker. So I think Ray Horton and his staff is still kind of working through this personnel, figuring exactly where everybody fits, which is why you see Agba go back and forth from line to linebacker.
Scott, who's the one guy that you are pulling for to make this team that you see as being on the bubble?
Man, that's a good question. I don't know. Maybe Taylor Gabriel. I got a little soft spot for him. I talked to him early in camp, and I was surprised at how confident he was in himself and that the fact that he thought he was going to make this team. And going into camp, I thought he had no chance. But the way he's played in practice and then showed up in Tampa Bay, I'd like to see the guy stick around.
Taylor Gabriel, that's it. All right, Scott, we'll see you at the stadium tonight. The Browns and the Bears, the preseason finale. And finally, we get to start playing those real games September 11th. Thanks so much, Scott.
Thanks, guys.
All right, when we come back, speaking of Corey Coleman, we will hear from him on today's show. That's when we return on CBD. Welcome back to CBD. One starter who will play tonight and we want to see get into a good rhythm is, of course, Corey Coleman, the Browns' first-round pick at wide receiver. Spoke with the media, and here's what he had to say.
So how was that first night out there, Friday night?
It was fun. A lot of energy out there, moving kind of fast, but it's, you know, I was just happy to be out there.
Coach said he thought maybe you were pressing a little bit in your first game action. Did you feel like that?
Right, you know, I really didn't know what to expect. But it was good for me to get the feel to be out there.
Coach said you're going to play in this fourth preseason game a little bit. Do you think that's a good idea, especially for you, since you haven't played much yet this preseason?
Right, I think it's, you know, a good idea. Give me some extra reps because, like you said, I haven't played in the first two preseason games. So, and I want to play too. So I'm excited, you know, to see how much I play. But, you know, I'm just excited to be out there.
How much catching up? What do you have to catch up on most?
Catch up on most, I have to say, that's a good question. Just the rhythm of the game, just, you know, getting involved and me and Robert being on the same page.
Do you feel that's something that can come before week one? It's only, you know, whatever, 10 days away?
Yes, you know, I think we're going to do great. I think we're going to be fantastic. We just got to keep working, coming to practice, and believing in ourselves and the team and the organization.
It looked like, you know, during the telecast, a CBS, like, sideline announcer said that you and Terrell looked like you were having some kind of words on the sideline. Is that, what happened with that?
We've just been brothers, just going over stuff, you know, in the heat of the game. Sometimes frustrating, especially when you're, you know, not doing so good, we're losing. We just, you know, discussed and talked it over. We weren't yelling or arguing at each other. We was just talking, just, you know, being brothers.
What did you learn out there about this game that night?
I learned that you got to have a lot of patience and, you know, you got to do all the little details right.
Did it feel rusty coming back from missing those couple of weeks?
No, I didn't feel rusty. I felt fast. It's just like, you know, you got to do small details right. And you got to know what to do at the right time. And you got to know a lot as a receiver.
When you say that patience and attention to detail, what happens if you're not patient? What happens if you don't pay attention to the details?
You can get frustrated, then you might miss. You know, if they're in the covers that you need to do something else, then you might miss what you need to do, your assignment. So, you know, you got to make sure you see everything.
Did you think you were going to have a chance to make that catch on that deep ball, and then did you get tangled up with the guy? Or?
Right, you know, practice went through it. You know, the 3 days were up there, prepped for it. But, you know, they're in a different coverage than what we thought they were going to be in, I think, and it's just, you know, the way the game goes. You know, they make good plays on defense. We make good plays on offense. It's just the way the game is.
What about even something little like losing your shoe out there? did that throw you off for a second or anything like that?
It did. You know, it was a great route. No, but got to get some better shoes. You know, we're on some soft grass and running too fast.
Corey, when you were at Baylor, were you like the star of the show? And if so, how do you adjust to like sharing that spotlight?
You just got to be patient. And, you know, it's not about being a spotlight. It's about winning as a team. And, you know, I'm going to do whatever I can to help this team win.
Good. have a bit of a sidebar question here. Jim Brown, who is still a special assistant with the Browns, has come out in support of Colin Kaepernick using his position to have a voice for a social issue. Jim Brown, again, still associated with the Browns. How do you feel? Do you have a thought about Colin Kaepernick and what he's doing, and whether or not it's the right place to use a position on a football team to make a social issue?
I haven't looked into that too much, and you know what he did, that's his opinion, and you know, he thinks that's the right way. I haven't looked into it, so I really don't know what to tell you.
Hey Corey, one of the local high school teams canceled a game because of sports hazing. Do you have any opinion, or do you think it's just blown out of proportion?
It depends what type of hazing. You know, sometimes guys can take it too far, and you know, it can go that route. And sometimes you got to pay your dues. So it depends how far they take it.
On the game the other day, were the defensive backs faster, quicker than what you're used to?
I wouldn't say that. Smarter, you know.
And how does that play out? Is that smarter? Just like, you're surprised that they can read some of what you're doing?
Kinda, and I guess like the good ones, or the great ones, they study a lot, so they know, you know, a lot more than a corner in college would know.
That's Browns wide receiver Corey Coleman there. Matt, I really think it's important that Coleman gets a couple of catches, gets some confidence, and has some success today against the Bears.
I agree, and I think as I was listening to that interview, the one thing that I love the way he answered it, and I love that he just didn't blurt out anything when he says, you know, what's the one thing that you need to get back to or regain going into this final preseason game, knowing you're going to get some, you know, reps with the starters? And he kind of paused and he goes, oh, that's a good question. Probably because, you know, you don't think about those things until you're asked them, because you collectively, you know, I got to get off on the football. I got to understand where I got to line up. Then I got to, you know, get off a certain coverage and reckon, you know, there's a lot to do. But the one thing that I feel, and he answered it perfectly, is to get back into the rhythm of the game.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that we knew that he and RG3 had because of his production, and Scott Petrak talked about that scrimmage that Friday night before he missed the Orange and Brown scrimmage the next day, and Terrell Pryor, of course, went off, was in great rhythm with Robert Griffin III. And it's what led to, you know, our optimism about this offense, what a great pick he was, and not even really being concerned with him missing some time with, you know, that hamstring injury. But it has hindered, not the player that he's going to be, but it hindered his rhythm. His rhythm that, you know, as he got in it and he got comfortable, he was probably checking all those boxes that you have to as a wide receiver, which we've, you know, seen Terrell Pryor really grasp because he's been out there every day doing it. When you miss time, you don't regress a lot, but you lose some of the little nuances that come with lining up every day in two-a-days and recognizing a formation and aligning on the inside of the numbers instead of on the numbers or outside the numbers. Those little things,
yeah,
and they can't happen. They've got to have all that ironed out, because this team does not have a lot of margin for error. So they've got to be darn near perfect, and especially in offense, if we're going to be, you know, it's going to be the shootout at OK Corral, let's put up those points. Let's put them up. And Corey Coleman's going to be a big part of that.
I've been doing a lot of, you know, the fantasy circuit for radio and calling in online and Skyping and TV and whatnot. And because it's funny, when I hosted my own show, you'd have somebody who knew the team, you know, well, for all the teams to talk about. So I've been doing it for the Browns, and it's been very funny to just talk about the team and say, you know, for the first time, this team is fantasy relevant. Part of it is because the talent is here, and part of it is because they are going to have to score a lot of points.
And let me ask you this question, and it's only because it's relevant to me, as I got the question yesterday, do I partake in a fantasy league? And I, you know, we all hold, as much as we want to win the league, for you and I'm sure it holds supreme, but at least in my league, I always give a look because we talk about the Browns so much. You know, with Barnage, no one could have expected the Barnage explosion last year. So he's going to be a fantasy darling this year, you know, in this offense. Let me ask you a question. about Terrell Pryor. And the reason why is, you know, friend of the show, my friend, also, you know, Gibbs' friend, plays in the same fantasy league, Pat Coyne, texted me last night at 9:37, and he says, Gibbs took Terrell Pryor in, like, the sixth round, claimed, claimed analytics. And so what are your thoughts centered around Terrell Pryor from a fantasy perspective?
I like Terrell Pryor, and I was actually on with Hugh Douglas, my buddy Brian Westbrook's former teammate with the Eagles this morning, and he drafted Terrell Pryor as well, much later than Gibbs. And I said, I think, you know, for the first 4 weeks, he obviously is going to have some good upside. They're going to have to throw the ball. Coleman's kind of easing back. He's the one guy that has had more reps with RG3 than anybody in that wide receiver room. And I think he's got an opportunity to put up some good numbers early in the season. And so I think he's a guy that season long, I don't know what kind of value you'll get from him, but he's obviously going to always be a factor in the red zone with his size. If he's the one who gets the matchup with the smaller DB, you throw him that jump ball. He's got vertical speed. I think for him to be able to be successful over the course of what I would call a 16-game season, we're just going to need to see more diversification in his route tree in terms of not what he runs, but what he's successful running. We've seen comebacks and we've seen goes so far. We need to see him on some of the crossers. We need to see him on some of the deep digs, inward and outward breaking routes. And if we can see things like that, then you know that he can compete in the short, intermediate, and in the deep game. And then all of a sudden, he's a guy that I think has a lot of opportunity and potential with this team to be a surprise in fantasy football.
Thank you. Well, it's what I needed to hear, because I was considering the same.
Analytics.
Off of waivers, sixth round.
That's what we're saying. Anyway. When we come back, we'll tell you what we're watching for. Three things each from Matt Wilhelm and myself. Take phone calls as well, 216-578-0850. Zagur and Wilhelm, game day. Let's go. Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, preseason game number four, the final one. Now, usually the starters don't play much. Last night in Tampa, nobody played. Starters, second teams, really don't like anybody played in that game for the Redskins or the Buccaneers. But starters will be playing for the Cleveland Browns. And Matt, let's start in here. Three things, you can be as specific as you want. Three things you're looking for. Let's start with number one for you.
Number one for me is make up for the lost time that I felt like the Tampa Bay game was for us. After multiple days of good practices, we laid an egg. And there's going to be weeks this season because of how young this team is and some of the questions that we have as a franchise where we can have a good week of practice. Hugh Jackson and Ray Horton can have a good plan, and we come out and we just don't play that well, and we lay an egg. And I want to see this team bounce back from that adversity. I want to see, you know, the change in the tone of Hugh Jackson's voice. I want to see the leaders of this locker room not allow it to happen two consecutive weeks. And so that means I want to see the starters come out and play well. And specifically, the offense, I want to see them take the incremental step that I thought they missed out on in Tampa.
I want to see, so the first thing I want to see, I'm going to stick with the defense. I want to see pressure on the quarterback from the starters. If this is they're going against backup offensive linemen, they need to be able to get pressure, specifically Agba. I'd like to see Danny Shelton collapse the pocket on a play or make a big-time penetration and a stop of a run. I want to see a couple of splash plays from the guys up front, the front four, front five, however you want to call it, in a 3-4-4-3. I want to see that front make some splash plays and show disruption, penetration, and pressure. All right, Matt Wilhelm. Number two.
Number two is I want to see who plays on what special team. And I know you've pointed out multiple times, but that is our best inclination. The starters on the special teams are probably the best understanding of who is falling into the best favor in the eyes of the coaches. They might not, like a guy like Tank Carter's not going to play a lot, maybe even, you know, on defense. But a guy like Cam Johnson and Dominique Alexander, if they're getting reps with the number one punt team or the number one kickoff return, as well as kickoff return, they're probably going to be the guys that are in good standing and going to make this football team. So everyone's eyes, as I said, my number one point was to watch the starters on offense and watch the starters on defense. I'm going to be watching the starters on special teams so that tomorrow's show, and as we get the next 7, 8, 9 days prior to September 11th, who do we feel most comfortable with, and who's going to make up this 2016 Cleveland Browns team, even though I feel, and Scott Petrick kind of said the same thing, that maybe three or four guys are not currently on this roster that will sign off of someone else's to get an immediate impact. But the core, that 48 number, I think is a key number in our head. That 48 number is going to be easy to get to, and we're going to have a strong understanding of who that is after tonight.
So the second thing that I want to see, and I know this doesn't necessarily sound like the most exciting thing, but in light of everything that has happened, right, it does seem to me to make a little bit of sense. And that is to see what is going on with the punters. Because now you need to see them. They've got to go. You bring in, you get in the trade, Casey Redfern. You then sign Michael Pilardi. Will they both kick tonight? I want to see that. Do they come out and kick effectively? I want to see that. Because if they can kick effectively, you know, if these guys come out and say one of them hits a couple boomers, all of a sudden you're like, we just got a fourth round pick for Andy Lee. So I think it's important for a lot of reasons to see those guys, see them kick effectively, and see what happens there. But Michael Pilardi and then Casey Redfern, those two guys, I think there will be a little bit of a spotlight on them, and I think they'll have the opportunity to kick some punts tonight, and so it'll be fun to watch them and see what they do there. All right, Wilhelm, last thing that you are really watching for.
Last thing that I'll watch for tonight, and it's technically sort of two things, but they kind of go hand in hand, is I'm going to be watching the young wide receivers on who takes advantage of the opportunity tonight, and I'm going to look at the young cornerbacks, because I think those are the two rooms that you and I have gone back and forth about who makes this team and who doesn't, and also how many do we carry in those rooms, and what's the high number, what's the low number? Seven wide receivers or six wide receivers? Is it six corners? Is it seven quarters? Corners, I'm sorry. So those are going to be the guys, and I think those that make up, not so much, we'll see the starters, but when the starters get out, who's that first wave, and how do they play? And you know, and even who's going to be that third corner in the nickel situation with the twos? And how do they play? And then how quickly are those guys in and out? Has a big say. And who's next in right after that? And how do those guys play? That's the best way to understand it. And I think for Cody Kessler, I want to see Cody Kessler get comfortable with these wide receivers, because there's a great understanding of who he's working with and throwing the football to repeatedly in this game. That player will produce, but that player is also the future. If Cody Kessler is, in fact, our future quarterback, who he's pumping the football to, is it you know, Jordan Payton, is it Hollywood Higgins, is it Darius Jennings? Those guys are going to get opportunities, and who falls into that favor has a good understanding of who's going to make this team.
So I'm looking along your same vein, Cody Kessler. I want to see Corey Coleman have success early, but I'm looking at that defensive backfield. Is there anybody that back there that is going to step up and say, I need to be on this team at safety? Can Raheem Moore come out and make some plays? Because Pierre Desir makes some plays at safety in this one. At corner, Tracy Howard, early riser, looked great, then had a rough game against Atlanta, followed up with a rough game against Tampa Bay once he got moved into a more prominent role. Charles Gaines, where has he been? He struggled a little bit, although I thought he played better against Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Eric Patterson had that interception against, I believe it was against Green Bay. Since then, not a whole lot. Or maybe it was against Atlanta. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. But Eric Patterson, it was against Atlanta. It was a home game. Against, I want to see, you know, who steps up there, who's going to make the team, what are those battles, and then pay attention even beyond that, to your point, special teams. Is Don Jones getting all the first team special teams reps? Is Howard getting any of those special teams reps? Which one of those bubble guys are getting those reps? And then do we see Ricardo Lewis? Do we see Jordan Payton? That, I think, is something to pay attention to. Lewis, maybe the injury. When you think about Jordan Payton, though, that there's no injury there. So if you don't see him, that just means they don't want to put him out there. Now, I would imagine that's a dual-edged sword, because other teams in the NFL are also privy to what you're doing, but at the same time, do they want to necessarily, because if you release him and cut him at the 53 cutdown, any team that signs him has to sign him to their active roster.
Yes.
To their 53. So it's just, it's something to keep an eye on there with those guys. But I think there's going to be some interesting stuff. Raheem Mostert versus Terrell Watson, if Mostert's able to play. That's the other part of it. How much do those injuries matter lingering into week one? Do they matter for setting the 53? If Marlon Moore's not going to be ready week one, do you keep Marlon Moore as a designated special teams guy if he's not going to help you in the one area he's supposed to help you? Does that hinder his ability with that hip pointer? Does that hinder Raheem Mostert's ability if he's not ready to be your kick returner in week one? Are you carrying him? Because then you basically, if he's not ready to play week one and you want to keep Raheem Mostert, you've got to carry Terrell Watson as well because you need to have another running back in the event that Crow or Duke get hurt.
Right. So, and the one thing that, for all of you out there listening, whoever makes the trip to Philadelphia is on our active 53-man roster in week one, we guarantee that salary.
If they're a veteran.
If they're a veteran, we guarantee them that salary. So a Marlon Moore, he could be on our roster for just the Philadelphia game, and we could release him soon thereafter. He is guaranteed to make the $800,000+ that is his one-year base salary with us. He can then sign with another team. He gets that opportunity that I never got to, which is to double dip. So the Cleveland Browns would pay him weeks 1 through 16, and he'd sign with another team. And as long as he maintains his standing on their roster, he could play 15 more weeks and get paid for 15 weeks there and essentially paying for roughly about $1.6 million when his base salary with just the Cleveland Browns alone is a little over $800,000.
I think double dipping sounds fantastic.
You can only do it one time, and it is fantastic, and I never got to partake, which is why I'm living in the past.
Which is why I'm wishing I did get to partake. All right, when we come back, final thoughts, your last opportunity to say what it is that you're looking for to see. Who's your pet cat, as they say, that you want to see make this football team? 216-578-0850. We'll talk about that more tomorrow as well here on CBD. Welcome back to CBD, wrapping it up here. And thank goodness we're wrapping up the preseason. Man, I got to say,
yes,
it's a little bittersweet for me today. This could have been a great day in my life if I had gotten that one series for charity. It would have been really wonderful. Would you? Okay. Do you feel a buzz around the city about this game tonight?
No.
Not that I would have generated a buzz around the city, but at least in my household and like in the household of like my friends and people who – and in probably in the household of all the
how
people.
How many more tickets, if this had been, if you say by Tuesday, midday, it were announced.
That I would quarterback one series?
That you'd be in uniform and potentially quarterback. How many tickets do you think would be sold?
I think it's got to be a guarantee. And I think it would sell.
Well, how do you know? It's a teaser. You're going to come anyway, right?
I think it would be.
It's like coming to watch a train wreck.
Well, yeah, but I think you want to be guaranteed.
It may happen. It may not.
You want to be guaranteed that you're going to get a chance to see that train wreck. I think it would add, I think it could sell maybe an extra 200 tickets.
Really?
Yeah. Everybody I know, people would fly. A lot of my friends would fly in. I'm just keeping it like from my. I don't know that there'd be any general interest spike. Although there would be people who don't like me that would love to come watch me. Hopefully, get like decapitated.
You think the real BV would fly in for that?
Real BV, I bet would be here. I bet GI George would come.
Cam come down for that?
For sure, the Canadian delegation would be here. Yeah, my buddy Dave Bass would be here. From the New York State Trooper who comes in.
G.I. George.
Yeah.
Driving
so a lot of the
from
friends
Baltimore,
of the show.
Right?
Vince Condi would be here. There'd be a lot of – I think that they're – like, I think the Miz would have stayed for sure. He was in town last night. We had our AFFL draft, which was a lot of fun.
How did that go?
I love my team. So I think well. And his team is horrible. And he just like – he – I don't know what happened.
Does he think it's the best?
No. He just keeps saying my team is rotten. Like, why does this always happen to me?
How do you draft a rotten team?
Because he picked – he picked before, like in some rounds he was before me and some rounds he was after me. And also his keepers were early. So when you have keepers in the second and fourth round, you only get to add a first and a third of those. Whereas my keepers were just as good as his,
and they're
but
like
they were ninth and 12th.
Okay, wow.
So I got my first 8 picks added to those guys. So,
and who were your keepers?
In that one I had Mark Ingram. Brian Vaughn says I'd be there no doubt. That's right, baby. I had Mark Ingram in the 12th and Jordy Nelson in the 9th.
Jordy Nelson's going to have a great year.
I think he's going to have a sensational year. Yes.
I think
so. Here's my squad. I'll tell you because people really care about other people's fantasy teams. So I'm gonna take some time right here just for 1 second. And I was being sorry. That was noted sarcasm. FYI. All right. Quarterback Drew Brees. Running backs. I've got Mark Ingram, LeSean McCoy.
Okay.
Arian Foster is my third. Don't love him. And D'Angelo Williams.
Like that.
For 3 weeks.
Yes.
It may only be 3 weeks.
I have Le'Veon Bell.
But I've got him. And then my fifth guy. Okay. And my fifth guy is LeGarrette Blount, who I think is going to score a lot of touchdowns there. Then I've got at receiver, Jordy Nelson. I've got Dez Bryant. I've got Michael Crabtree as my third. We only start two. And then guess who's coming back in week 5 for me?
Josh Gordon.
Flash Gordon, baby. And then I got Marty Soros Rex at tight end and the Texans D. I like this team. I'm feeling good about it. Feeling a lot of upside there.
Marty Soros Rex?
Yeah.
Martellus Bennett?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he's going to be all that productive in New England.
New England had two top five tight ends in 2011. My friend Marty Soros Rex going to do it again in 2016. Gronk gets hurt all the time. Imagine if Gronk gets hurt. Marty Soros Rex might be the number one tight end. Anyhow, that'll do it for us. By the way, Behind Enemy Lines also said that he would be here to see me get destroyed. Thank you, George. We'll see you down at First Energy Stadium. We'll let you know. 53-man roster set Saturday. We'll talk about that tomorrow here on CBD. I want to thank Scott Petrak for joining us. For Matt Fontana and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.